This week's episode of War Rocket Ajax is brought to you by our friends at Valiant Comics, who have asked us to talk to you about Ninjak, as though they needed to. The first line of the new Ninjak number one is all of this supposed to impress me? So let me ask you if you think all of this is supposed to impress you. 40-page issue for $4, for $3.99. That includes a main story written by Matt Kent, a backup written by Matt Kent. The main story? It's Ninjak in the present, having adventures, kicking ass, being a ninja named Ninjak. It's drawn by Clayman. The backup? Oh, that's just Ninjak's origin, drawn by Butch Geis. You know, no big deal there. Full-length stories, 40 pages, $3.99. Ninjak, the master ninja. What does he do in this issue, Matt? Who does he fight in this issue?
He fights a young lady by the name of Roku, who can set things on fire with her hair.
Yeah, and her hair that she can also use as a whip, like Kabuki Quantum Fighter.
And then he infiltrates Webnet.
Webnet. Which, I almost swore during the ad.
Which involves, one of the bosses is a sumo wrestler.
Oh, Ninjak is so great. We would be telling you about Ninjak even if Valiant was not paying us to tell you about Ninjak, because we are that excited about Ninjak. And it is coming soon, and you can jump on Ninjak number one. Now, Matt and I, we've been fans of Ninjak for a while. You don't need to have read any comics with Ninjak in them to get on the Ninjak train. This is a perfect jumping on point. And again, 40 pages for $4. That's not just the first issue. That's number two. That's number three. That is how it's going for the first arc of Ninjak. So definitely go to your local comic book store. Tell them, hey, y'all got that Ninjak? Because I want Ninjak. And War Rocket Ajax sent me.
Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax, the internet's most dangerous and destructive comic book and pop culture podcast. I think I just said pop culture, which makes it sound like we're really into dogs. I am not. We are your hosts. My name is Chris Sims. With me, as always, Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how are you doing tonight?
I'm about 50%. No, I'm above 50%. I'd say I'm like 80%. But again, I'm here for all of you, our wonderful listeners. I'm not going to
call you
down.
Mr. No Days Off. Mr. No Days Off, Matt Wilson.
Oh, don't get me started on the reuniting of the primetime players.
I didn't see it. I heard about it, and I'm very excited about it.
They're back together.
But that is not what this show is about. We are coming at you live from the heart of the polar vortex.
That's right. It is way too cold to be the Carolinas right now.
Now, Matt, you're in North Carolina, so I'm sure you've got it worse than me.
Single digits in this neck of the woods. Yeah.
It's down below freezing. It's 25 degrees Fahrenheit. So it is a chilly evening.
It was Chicago style weather here in Asheville.
Like deep dish weather?
Yeah, the high was 9 today.
Oof.
Terrible. Yeah, that's pretty rough.
For all the folks up north, for all the folks in New England that are buried under snow, for all the folks in the Minnesota area, I know it's colder there, but also I don't own a jacket. So now you could say, Chris, that's your own fault. Yes, it is. But still, it makes a difference.
Well,
it's a different thing.
Look, we know that you have to brave bad weather for your job and what you do. And we're going to do the same.
Listen, so that I get out of bed, it is within my power to work from bed. I just want to make that clear. I get out of bed every day at the crack of noon, just like everybody else, when I could be working from under blankets all the time.
We have a great show for everybody this week. Our guest is the artist of the unbeatable Squirrel Girl, Erica Henderson.
I would say the unbeatable artist of the unbeatable Squirrel Girl.
She is unbeatable, and she's a good friend of ours, and we're going to talk to her and have a lot of fun talking to her. But before we do that, Chris, we have some business to get out of the way. First is some business I don't want to just get out of the way. I want to do it because we appreciate our patrons. Patrons?
That is a way to pronounce that word.
Our patrons on Patreon. I think I tried to combine patron and Patreon into one word. But we're going to read off some names here.
Should I sing my song?
So please sing a song, Chris.
This is an original song that I wrote for this segment. It goes like this. Patreon backers, backers, backers.
Oh, I think Paul McCartney's attorneys are approaching your door right now.
Is he that guy that Kanye brought to the world?
Yeah, him.
All right, well, who do we got, Matt? Who are we thanking this week?
We're thanking
David. Why are we so loopy? It is 10:48 p.m.
We are thanking David Rapp.
Thank you, David.
Andrew Keith.
Thank you, Andrew.
Kevin Walker.
Kevin Walker, thank you.
Mark Rodenhurst.
Mark, thanks.
Alexander Ma.
Alexander, we appreciate your support.
Michael Carroll.
Michael, you did a good thing, buddy. We're excited about you.
Scott Parrish.
Thank you, Scott.
Ken Arthur.
Thanks, Ken.
Chris Vincent.
Oh, that's my name. Thanks, Chris.
Quentin.
Thank you, Quentin.
Travis.
Tarantino?
Yeah, I'm assuming that's who that is.
Yeah.
Travis Lassiuk.
Thank you, Travis.
Cliff Allred.
Thanks, Cliff.
Adam Kennedy.
Oh, Adam, thanks so much.
Ian Zylstra.
Thank you, Ian.
Alex Androsky.
Thanks, Alex.
Ian.
Thanks, Ian. The two Ians.
Yeah. William Jacobs.
Thanks, William.
Angelo Zanola.
Thanks, Angelo.
Brian Davis.
Oh, Brian, good job.
And Alex Hardison.
Thumbs up, Alex.
That is the list of patrons that we are thanking this week.
Can I point something out to you?
Sure.
We've had multiple Chris's, because I have said that's my name several times over the course of this. No Matt's.
Which is weird.
Yeah. Yeah, but step it up, Matt.
Well, we had a Matthew, but
all I'm saying is Chris's are showing up.
Yeah,
Chris's are behind this show. Matt's, your people, Wilson. They got short arms and deep pockets. They got padlocks on the purse strings.
You know, that fits the bill pretty well. That fits if I'm representative of Matt's. Anyway, thank you to all those patrons who have helped us out. We really do appreciate you and appreciate you helping us. You're going to be getting some bonus audio this week, so keep an eye out for that. If you would like to help us out on Patreon, go to patreon.com/warrocketajax. Chris,
that's right.
Time.
Bonus audio and bonus art.
Yeah.
As of last week, the first of my Patreon drawings went out. What was it? It was Calabac playing basketball. So if you want to see that, head over to patreon.com/warrocketajax. Now, Matt, let's get on with it.
Yes. Let's do some checking. All right, Chris, we gotta really speed things along here. We were way too loopy in our opening segment. What do you have to check in with?
The fans love it. God help them.
They do. What do you have to check in with?
My check this week is a fairly easy one. We always like to mention it when we appear on other podcasts, like Into It with L. Collins, where you were on to talk about Spider-Man and I was on to talk about Christmas, both of which were great shows. This week, I was interviewed for the 2000 AD Thrillcast, talking about Judge Dredd the Apocalypse War, which we both we actually read for this show because we both had it, but we had not read it yet when it came up for Every Story Ever.
That's right.
So I got to sit down with Mike Mulcher, who is the PR droid for 2000 AD, and just talk about how great the Apocalypse War was and how much it sort of affected Judge Dredd over the years, and how it starts off so unassuming. Because it starts in Block Mania, and it's just like it's one block in Mega City 1, and then it builds and builds and builds until it is literally like a world-ending nuclear war. So if you enjoy hearing us talk about comics, specifically Judge Dredd comics, check out the 2000 AD Thrillcast. Here's who's on it. Here's who's on this particular episode. It's me and Carlos Esquera, the co-creator of Judge Dredd.
That's fantastic.
Not in the same segment, which would have been weird, but still pretty weird to have us on the same show. So definitely check that out.
That means if Carlos Esquera listened to the episode to hear himself, he definitely heard you as well.
Yes. Yeah. Just super weird.
Yeah.
Matt, what is your check this week?
My check is going to be fairly brief. In the interview segment, we're going to talk at length about Marvel Puzzle Quest and how Squirrel Girl is in that. And it's the Squirrel Girl that's based off of Erica's art, which is kind of extremely cool. And I've fallen down the Marvel Puzzle Quest hole again. I talked a couple weeks ago about how I deleted a bunch of apps, like addictive apps, off of my phone. And I have not been playing all that many games on my phone, but I am suddenly like back into Marvel Puzzle Quest. And partially because of Squirrel Girl being in it.
Yeah, I honestly, like, I get it. I get that they're, you know, the way freemium games work. I just wish they would tell me the amount of money I need to pay them to have Squirrel Girl on my team.
Yeah.
Like, just give me a dollar amount. Because I'm not going to, look, I will tell you right now, I'm not going to spend money to buy hero points in ISO 8. That's not happening. I'm not going to buy random chances. I'm not going to play the lottery so that I can look at Venom 40 more times. Just tell me, like, is it 20 bucks? Do I need to give you 20 bucks to get Squirrel Girl? Is that what you want? Because I'll give you 20 bucks.
I refuse to spend any money on Marvel Puzzle Quest and have done a very good job of that. But
like, the thing is, though, I play Marvel Puzzle Quest more than I play any other game. Because I work from home, and so nothing is stopping me. There's nothing stopping me from playing Marvel Puzzle Quest constantly. So at this point, like, I enjoy the game. I play it a lot. I honestly, like, I feel like it is worth a little bit of money to me because I've gotten a lot out of it, right? But at the same time, I'm not going to buy a lottery ticket.
I think the most frustrating thing in it to me is that I get the characters I want. But when you first get them, it's a shitty version of that character. And it takes forever to make them not a shitty version of that character.
Yeah, that is true. Also, it's really frustrating to me that the Jamie McKelvey costume, the Kelly Sue Jamie McKelvey costume for Captain Marvel, I don't like that version. I don't like her powers as much as I like the Miss Marvel costume version of Carol Danvers.
Yeah.
Who I think has... And look, I like that costume. I like the McKelvey costume more. It's frustrating that her powers... Anybody who... I can't believe the segment's going this long. Anybody who has a power that gives the enemy a strike tile, screw that character.
Yeah. She-Hulk has one of those, too.
Yeah, ridiculous.
Ridiculous. All right. Let's make some recommendations. Chris, what do you have to recommend?
My recommendation this week is going to be a video game that is... maybe about a year old, I think. It's been out for a while, but I finally just got around to playing it. And I mentioned it last week. I told you I'd report back once I'd gotten a little deeper into it. It is called Mercenary Kings. And what took me so long to play it was that I was a Kickstarter backer for Mercenary Kings, but I did not know it was possible to hook up my Xbox 360 controller to my MacBook and play video games that way. So now I can do that, and that's actually pretty exciting. because there's a lot of games on Steam that I would like to play with an Xbox 360 controller. Mercenary Kings, if you don't know about it, is a game that is sort of based on Metal Slug in a lot of ways. It's a side-scrolling kind of military action game, and all of the characters and sprites were designed by Paul Robertson, who you are probably familiar with even if you don't recognize the name, because he is the guy who did all of the sprites for the Scott Pilgrim game. So if you are familiar with his work, you can kind of guess what everything in Mercenary Kings looks like. There's a lot of people who look like they're from River City Ransom, but they have enormous bouncy breasts. So if that is what you are into, Mercenary Kings, it's the game for you.
I can't imagine a video game with women with big bouncy breasts really getting off the ground, but...
never really see it.
Good on them for taking a chance, you know?
It is not something you see a lot of. I also think that Paul Robertson did the character designs for the video game episodes of Gravity Falls, if you've seen those.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Seuss and the Real Girl, I know he did the designs for, which is really cool. The kind of core gimmick of Mercenary Kings is that it adds in RPG elements, and one of those is that you can buy guns in different parts. Like, you get crafting materials and money, and then you can buy the receiver, the barrel, the stock, the sight, and ammo. And you buy them all separately, and you can combine them separately into different versions of guns. You can use the regular set and put it all together, or you can take this stock from this gun, this barrel from this gun, this sight from another gun, and you can, they're all in specific sets, but you can also combine them all in different ways to make a new gun, and they each have their own different effects on what you're using. It's a really good idea. In practice, the game ends up being kind of repetitive, because you are going through there's multiple areas in the game, and they're actually pretty well laid out, I think. But there's, 10 missions per rank, so you end up going through the same area a lot, especially if you're backtracking and picking stuff up. Again, I kickstarted it. I was I'm really a big fan of Paul Robertson's sprite work, so that was what sold me on it. And it's a fun game to play. I'm kind of glad that I didn't just buy it, because I feel like it's a game that I'm going to play a lot and then get kind of tired of later. But for right now, I'm still enjoying it. Matt, what is your rec this week?
Unfortunately, I have to start out my rec with a downer, and this is pretty recent news for us as we're recording this, but by the time listeners are going to be hearing this, I'm sure they will be well aware of this. But Thursday, we found out that Harris Whittles, who was a comedian and an executive producer on Parks and Recreation and that kind of stuff, a really funny guy, died of a drug overdose. And it's super sad. And it just so happens that I had been catching up recently on a podcast that he did intermittently with Scott Aukerman called Analyze Fish, which is, I may have even talked about it on the show before. I may have recommended
I believe you have.
But it's basically Harris trying to convince Scott Aukerman to like Fish, the band Fish. And it is an extremely funny show. And I'm actually, with this news about Harris Whittles, I kind of feel like I want to go back and listen to all those episodes again, because they're so funny. And at the beginning of each one, Harris does this intro where he says, I'm Harris Whittles, and I'm going to take you on a journey through the cosmos. Sorry. Where he does that sorry as part of the intro every time. It is a really funny show. Harris Whittles was a really funny guy, and he is gone now. And so it's probably worth it. It is worth it to go back and check in with some of the stuff that he did while he was around. He created Humble Brag, which will live on forever, I think. And Analyze Fish is just a really, really funny podcast. So if you haven't listened to any of it, there may be parts of it now that seem not so funny in retrospect, but on the whole, it's a really funny podcast, and I don't think there's a better time to go check in with it if you haven't yet. So that's my check, and I'm sorry to be a bummer, but it's worth going and listening to that show. All right, those are our checks and recs. Chris, let's talk about some of the comics that came out this week. Let's do it. Chris, I guess we're starting with Justice League number 39.
Oh, boy. Yes, we are, Matt. Yes, we are.
What is there to say about Justice League number 39?
It's like you said at the end, like when we talked about 38. It's another story where the Justice League is fighting the Justice League. And the good guys are Lex Luthor and Captain Cold.
Yeah, it's super weird how Captain Cold is like basically fully reformed 3 years into the New 52.
And not only that, but it's weird that he's reformed, and also where like the conversation that he has with Wonder Woman is really weird. Wonder Woman's opening narration is really weird. There's a part in this issue where she's like, just completely out of nowhere, I once fought a monster. It was the Medusa.
Yeah.
It's like, and that line of logic doesn't really go anywhere. Like, I'm not sure why she brings that up.
Plus, like, why couldn't we see her fight Medusa? I mean, maybe that happened in the Wonder Woman series, but I kind of don't think it did.
I mean, it happened in Greg Rucka's Wonder Woman run.
Yeah.
And that fight was awesome.
Yeah. Whereas this fight, like all the fighting in this issue is just, like, holding off the infected Justice League people or members so that Lex Luthor and Superman can have a conversation while Lex Luthor just whips up a cure to the Amazovirus.
Yeah, and it's weird. Like, I mean, look, I was ready for this story to end. But it also ends in a really weird way where they just kind of discover, like, 4 or 5 pages from the end of the story. It's like, oh, you can just freeze them.
Yeah, that's exactly what happens. It's like, oh, we were not using powers on them because they were learning all these powers. But it's cool. We can just freeze them. No worries.
Yeah, Superman never used his super breath because he was worried they would find out. And so he didn't think, you know, they can copy power, so he didn't use this particular power on him. And that's what he needed to use until Captain Cold showed up and they realized that it, you know, it became a thing. Now, that actually makes sense. That is completely logical that, you know, Superman would use his heat vision and then they would copy his heat vision. He'd go, well, I better not do that anymore. It seems like this is something that should have come at the end of an issue. And then the next issue would be about them going on the offensive and kind of conquering it. Instead, it just kind of – it's like, oh, we can freeze them. And then like 3 pages later, everything's done. And they're like, yep, we made a cure for everyone in the world.
Yeah. And like it's rare, I think, for us particularly to say that something in a comic seems rushed. But everything in this comic seems rushed.
What really gets me about this, and I'm going to be an old man for a minute, if I can. The end result of this story is that the Amazovirus affects a bunch of people. And even though they get the cure, they say that 3% of the infected retain their metahuman abilities. If 3% of the world has superpowers, that's a lot of people with superpowers. I don't know, like, how far did the Amazovirus go? Do you know?
I don't know if it got out of Metropolis or
whatever city they're in.
They're in Metropolis because that's where LexCorp is.
Okay,
but I don't know if it got out of Metropolis or if it went further than that.
But I feel like that's an interesting, like, that's a good number of people. But also, that's what happens with the metagene bomb in Invasion. And I feel like Invasion is a much more fun story than this. I feel like this is, the Amazovirus has ended up being a worse version of Invasion.
I could tell you this, if everybody on Earth had been infected with the Amazovirus and 3% of people kept their powers, that would mean there were 210 million people.
That's powers. A lot of people's superpowers.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I know it's not that. It just seems like that's a weird, like, if 3% of people in Metropolis have superpowers, that's a lot of people, you know?
300,000.
Yeah.
Assuming that Metropolis is a city of 10 million people.
Yeah, if it's, you know, if it's a, I mean, I know that's what they say Gotham is. So if the cities are comparable, it's a lot of people. It's a lot of people. The third thing is that the last page of this comic promises that next month we will start Darkseid War. Oh, brother. Like, now, that's the monkey's paw. Like, all we've said for like 3 years is, hey, can they fight some fucking bad guys every now and then? And now it's like, oh, okay, Darkseid's coming back.
Do you think that Darkseid will have created his own puppet Justice League to fight this Justice League? Just so...
I would be willing to put cash on the barrelhead, Matt, and bet you money that he's going to use the anti-life equation on the Justice League. And so the Justice League will be like the Darkseid Justice League.
Oh, God.
And so it's going to be Lex Luthor versus Darkseid. Why not just do a fucking Lex Luthor ongoing?
Yeah, that seems to be what Geoff Johns wants to do. Or something where, like, the rogues are good guys. So many of his stories have been that.
It's been so much of bad, you know, bad guys doing the heavy lifting. Like, if I lived in the DC universe, I'd be like, you know, I mean, look, I've always said that if you lived in the DC universe, when Aquaman showed up to save you, you would be happy as hell to see Aquaman, right? Like, we in our universe can make fun of Aquaman because he's not real. In their universe, like, if a shark's about to eat you and Aquaman shows up and tells it to knock it off, you're happy as hell. You're like, I fucking love Aquaman. At this point, if I lived in the DC universe, I'd be like, man, the Justice League ain't shit.
Well, okay, so what's Lex Luthor's argument always been about why he wants to kill Superman or get rid of Superman? Because he thinks humanity doesn't need this alien guy to save them. Humanity can save itself. And specifically, Lex Luthor can save humanity. This run of Justice League has proven his point.
Yeah, Lex Luthor's right. Lex Luthor's correct. It's very, and again, I think that's an interesting story. I don't know if it's an interesting story when it's the fourth or fifth Justice League story, and all the other Justice League stories have been about the Justice League fighting the Justice League.
Yeah, I just don't, if this was Justice League number 300, sure, let's go all in on that.
Just fucking give me the Royal Flush Gang for a month, guys.
It's been all I want. 3 years. Of the new 52. All right. Let's talk about another comic. Let's talk about Bitch Planet number 3, which is so good.
Oh, Bitch Planet 3. Like, I don't know if we can say anything else about it other than this comic is great. This particular issue, even if you've missed out on 1 and 2, which, you know, if you're listening to War Rocket Ajax, I feel like there's a pretty good chance that you've either read them or you're just going to get the paperback when it comes out. But this issue is a great kind of look at the world of Bitch Planet and how terrifying it is.
It's a great look at just kind of the microcosm of the world. It's a great single issue character story. It's a great, like, present story with past flashbacks structure.
Yeah.
And it's got great art by Robert Wilson IV, who is someone we know, Chris.
He is a War Rocket Ajax favorite.
He is. And Ken Lowry, who will never be on the show, is drawn into this issue, which is pretty great.
Ken Lowry and Chip Zdarsky.
Yeah. And I'm
next to each other.
I'm willing to bet that all those other dudes on the those screens are people that Robert knows and that we may know.
There's a dude. There is a dude who looks like Fraction.
There is definitely a dude who looks like Matt Fraction in there. And there's a dude not on the screens, but near the end of the issue in the flashbacks, who looks a lot like Robert Wilson himself.
That is true. That is completely true. And he gets a the shit beat out
of
him.
He is not treated well. Yeah.
Nor should he be, because they are terrible, terrible people. The one thing about this issue is that you'll know what the last page is, like three pages into it. But at the same time, like it's not a matter of knowing that does not diminish how good this issue is. It's just very gratifying.
It's a great like fuck yeah, fist in the air kind of thing. And so far, Bitch Planet has excelled at making the reader go fuck yeah and put their fist in the air. And it's all earned. It's not just like splash page of a cool thing. It's like building up to making you go fuck yes.
It is an issue full of character work that has such a gratifying ending.
It's a wonderful crescendo that pays off beautifully. Kudos to Kelly Sue and to Robert Wilson for that great issue. All right, one last comic that we're going to talk about is Silk Number One.
That's right, spinning out of the events of Spider-Verse. In case you don't know, now I will say I have not read all of Spider-Verse. I have read Spider-Gwen. I have read every issue in which Tsukuya Yamashiro appears. And that's kind of about it. Like, I read a couple more. Like, I actually haven't read the one with Newspaper Spider-Man yet, but I really want to. I need to go find it.
I really have enjoyed, I haven't read everything, but I've really enjoyed the, what you might call the anthology books that are actually titled Spider-Verse, which include the introduction of Punk Spider-Man, and that has the Newspaper Spider-Man stuff, and all that. I've really dug those issues. Maybe the most of anything in Spider-Verse.
Yeah, the everything I've read of it has been good, but I haven't really been following it as closely as maybe I should have. But I did want to check out Silk, which is by Robbie Thompson and Stacey Lee and Ian Herring. Just because I like seeing new characters and I like seeing how they sort of fit into the Marvel Universe. The hook with Silk is that her name is Cindy Moon. She was a classmate of Peter Parker's. She was also at the science exhibition, and the spider also bit her. However, Ezekiel Sims, you know, J. Michael Straczynski's little tribute to me.
Yep.
Because we're so close. Convinced her to lock herself in a bunker for 10 years. So she has been living in a bunker, Fallout style, since she got her spider powers. And now she's out and trying to make her way in the world. The hilarious thing is that she gets a job at the Daily Bugle and sells J. Jonah Jameson pictures of Silk. which is, like, absolutely delightful. She has interesting powers. Like, she's basically got Spider-Man's powers, except she shoots webs out of her fingertips and can make clothing with them. Which seems kind of unusual. But the whole hook of the story is that she is trying to sort of reconnect with this world that she hasn't lived in, and she's having a real hard time adjusting while also being a spider-themed superhero. So it really kind of hits all those notes that I like in my Spider-Man and Spider-Man-related stories of kind of, you know, the cool spider teens feeling isolated and alone and kind of working through that through superheroics. I really enjoyed the first issue a lot. I'm actually not familiar with any of the creators. I am not familiar at all with Robbie Thompson or Stacey Lee. So this book was a really cool new surprise for me. But I really liked what I saw out of it. So if you're looking to read some Spider-Man adjacent titles, I would say check this one out.
Are you saying it's Spider-Man adjacent?
Spider-Man adjacent, bro.
But it's Mage.
Mage.
I'm doing some Peter Rosenberg talk.
Major?
I'm going to knock that off, yeah. No, all right.
You know what? Keep up with it. Go further with it.
All right.
Also, I should say I really like the logo for this book, which looks like it belongs in a romance comic from 1968.
Oh, yeah. It's the trade dress almost sells that comic on its own. It looks really good.
I mean, honestly, I didn't know what it was. I was like, Silk, what's that? And then I saw it on Comixology, and I clicked on it, and I saw that cover, and I'm like, yeah, okay. Here we go.
All right, those are our comics reviews for this week. Chris, it's time to talk to our good friend and the artist of Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, Erica Henderson.
Joining us for the program this week, we have someone that I'm very excited to talk to. Something that I say every week, but you know why? Because it's true every week. She is the artist of a great comic that I enjoy. You can see her art in Marvel Puzzle Quest, which I was very excited about when I saw it. No, she is the artist of the Unbeatable Squirrel Girl from Marvel Comics. She's also worked with me and Matt on a couple of occasions. Erica Henderson is here. Erica, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here, Chris.
I'm glad you could finally be here since Matt and I have used you for your artistic talents before. I'm glad that we are finally giving you the chance to promote yourself.
Erica, let's ask you the burning question that I think is on everyone's mind. How did it feel to take that step down from the Movie Fighters Kickstarter reward print to Squirrel Girl?
I mean, you gotta do some things for money every so often. It can't all be art.
That's right. That drawing of the drawing of me and Matt as Road Warrior villains, that was a passion project, I know.
It kind of was.
Yeah, I mean, that is true. You have drawn like several pictures of us for fun. I know you've drawn me and Chad. You've drawn me and Chad combined into one person.
Yeah, after the giant moment of Steven Universe came out.
Was that what it was? Was that what prompted
that? Yeah, it was Giant Woman, whatever she was called. It was that episode. When that came out, everyone online was drawing combined versions of them and a friend. And I was like, all three of us are going to be the greatest combination.
It's weird because it basically just looked like girl Chad.
It did, kind of. But with your hair.
But she was in a hoodie, is the thing.
I'm for hoodies.
Yeah, you've drawn me and Matt. The Ask Chris art is all you that I use every week for that column. You've drawn the Comics Alliance New Year's Party aftermath, oh, yeah. Which was a fun one. Also, every time you draw me, I am in a t-shirt, and I own other shirts, Erica, just because I never wear them.
You do now.
That's true. Now you're slumming it. Now you're slumming it with Marvel Comics.
I know.
So, I guess let's... Now, you and I, like, I knew you were doing Squirrel Girl, obviously, because we are friends and collaborators, and we talk a lot. But I didn't know, like, how did that come about? Like, was it just someone at Marvel was like, oh, Erica Henderson's really good. Like, hey, did you know that?
I had done two pages for Original Sins earlier in the summer of 2014. It was sort of a weird summer for me, so I'd actually do a lot of work, because I was dealing with family stuff. And then when that was, like, more or less dealt with, I was like, hey, I should email Will Moss again before Marvel forgets who the hell I am. Literally that day, I get an email from Marvel, from Will Moss, being like, so, you ever doing a Squirrel Girl book? If you want to draw it, that'd be cool.
So they literally just rolled up and offered you an ongoing series?
Yes.
I don't like you anymore, Erica.
Sorry.
You're a jerk. So at the time, like, did they say, like, oh, hey, it's going to be Ryan North?
They didn't. I had no idea. Like, literally, the whole email was like, they didn't even know if the book was going to be made. They wanted me to do a drawing of Squirrel Girl, I think, as, like, another presentation piece to see if they can get the book done. And then, like, a month after that first email, or a month after I sent them, you know, like, the four pages of drawings I did, I get this email from Ryan, hey, I guess we're doing Squirrel Girl together. And I was like, wait, what? It was sort of a surprise, but I think a week or two before that was when everyone online was freaking out because Marvel had trademarked Squirrel Girl. And everyone was like, it's going to be a movie. And I was like, oh, is this book happening?
They got to get through like 40 more movies before they could do it.
Yeah.
Like, because Squirrel Girl just wouldn't make sense.
It wouldn't.
Now, I can tell you, and I have a follow-up question for this later on, but I love Squirrel Girl. Like, that, I think Matt will agree with me when I say this, but I consider Squirrel Girl to be Steve Ditko's greatest creation.
Are you waiting for me to agree?
Yeah, I was waiting. I was giving you an opening there.
Mr. A is pretty good, I gotta say.
I hope somebody isolates that, I don't know, and makes it a ringtone. That could be a gift for our Patreon backers. No, I love Squirrel Girl. Like, I loved her, like, that original story in, what is it, Marvel Super Special, or...
Yeah, where she's terrifying. It's amazing.
Yeah, she's a Steve Ditko character, so she's horrifying. She has those weird eyes. I loved her in that. I love her in the Great Lakes Avengers book. I think it's funny when she showed up in Avengers, although kind of weird, since the Wolverine relationship is weird, the one that's implied. But, you know, it's a joke. I'm willing to relax on that. But yeah, I am a huge fan of that character, and I never expected, like, even with Marvel doing as much weird stuff as they've been doing lately, you know, weird stuff that I really love, I never would have expected her to get an ongoing. So, like, were you a fan of the character? And I know that's such a, like, entry-level interview question, and I apologize, but I am curious about it, because...
It's okay. I think your excitement makes the question okay.
Well, because she's such a weird, obscure one to suddenly have an ongoing series. It's like she came back in an event and then got an ongoing series. She was in, like, 4 pages of Avengers, and then 2 years later got a book.
Yeah. I was aware of the character, but I don't think I had any opinion one way or the other about her. You know, like, she seemed pretty cool, but I hadn't actually read GLA, because, like, it's, like, impossible to find. I don't like buying digital books, for the most part, so I just never consider buying, like, you know, something on Comixology.
That's weird, Erica.
I know. But I like having books. I like having a thing I can hold. So, like, I have a few Comixology things just because they're things I really, really want to read. And I can't get them anywhere else otherwise. But I like having a book. So I just never read a lot of Squirrel Girl stuff before I suddenly had to read all the Squirrel Girl stuff.
So what did you pick out? Like, did you... Because your version... I mean, you gave her a slightly redesigned costume. And obviously, I'm pretty sure that Unbeatable Squirrel Girl number one was... the first time we've ever seen her not in her superhero costume. Like, the first time we've ever seen Dorian Green, as opposed to Squirrel Girl. So, was there, like, a particular anything that you latched onto when it came time to kind of do your take on the character? Because I know that character design is something that you... That I think you really enjoy.
I do. So you're talking about not necessarily, like her new costume, but her civilian identity.
The civilian identity, the costume, all of it. Really?
I think with Doreen, a lot of it was sort of came from, you know, what I was reading in Ryan's script. Like, one of the things I always want to do with stuff like this is just make sure the character seems like they fit in, like, contemporary world. And I don't want to, like, have all the characters in, like, t-shirts, because that's the first thing I thought of. Or, like, I don't want them to be too fashionable. But I wanted her to look like, you know, a cute modern girl, because that's sort of, she comes across very cute. So just, you know, very, like, but casual. You know, she doesn't try too hard. In the end, I just wound up, like, giving her my own wardrobe, because I feel like that's sort of the same thing I do, where it's like, I want nice clothes, but I don't feel like doing anything else. I'm just gonna buy nice clothes and put them on, and they'll be good.
and you also did that with Party Girls, where.
No, Party Girls was aspirational clothes. Those were all the clothes I wanted to own.
I know you owned every earring that was worn in Subatomic Party Girls.
But mostly those were lightning bolt earrings, and I've got just way too many of those.
So does Doreen wear clothes that you actually own?
She does.
Okay, so, like, you just look in your closet and find clothes that she wears.
In fact, at the end of issue 4, she wears a dress that Bethany Fong gave me, so it's a dress that both of us have owned.
Doesn't Bethany show up in Squirrel Girl number one?
She does, and Jordan.
Bethany's been in so many comics in the past few years. She's in Skater X number two as well, which you can find at Comixology. It's really fun for me that Doreen Green, you know, Squirrel Girl doesn't wear a mask. She had the weird diamonds on her eyes for a while that became kind of toned down Juggalo paint when Paul Pelletier was drawing Great Lakes Avengers.
Right.
But I love the idea that she doesn't wear a mask. And so there is no appreciable difference in how Squirrel Girl looks and how Doreen Green looks. And yet that's kind of the charm of the book for me. Do you try to make her look any different when she's not in her costume?
I mean, the only difference is that her butt's bigger when she's not in her costume, so her tail's all up in her pants.
Her tail's all up in her pants. That's a good episode title. Shifting away from Squirrel Girl just for a little bit.
Okay.
I'm really surprised to hear that you don't like digital comics. Because I know that you draw digitally. Is that just a matter of convenience and that it's easier to draw and ink and everything when it's all digital? Or is it, like, would you prefer to draw on paper and you just don't have the time? Or do you just prefer drawing digitally to reading digitally?
I do prefer drawing digitally to reading digitally. I think part of it might be that because I use my computer in, like, every aspect of my life for the most part, like, including talking to friends. You know, that's the only way I interact with any of you people. it's nice to have, you know, when I'm reading a book, it's for fun generally, and it's something else. I'm not at the computer. I'm in some other room. I've got some other form of, like, media in front of me, and it's not a screen, and it's nice.
Now, so that said, you have done some drawing recently on paper that you've been showing off on Twitter and Tumblr and elsewhere. I know there was one particular drawing of Galactus that you were sharing as some kind of one of your, like, first big on paper artworks pages that you've done. So since you prefer doing digital, and I think you did explain this when somebody asked you, but I'm asking you again, why you decided to make that leap to paper, at least for that particular artwork?
It's more that I've just been wanting to go back to paper. There is a difference in how the work comes out and just how it feels when I'm working on it. And I wound up inking all of issue 4 on paper, and I actually found that it didn't take any longer for me, so I'm gonna keep doing it.
Now, does that include, like, scanning it in? Because I assume that you don't send in your originals.
No, I mean, okay, the scanning in takes a little bit longer, but it's actually not that bad, because I'll, like, put on Brooklyn Nine-Nine or something, and, you know, it'll take the duration of an episode, but whatever.
You also have the, doing it on paper gives you the added benefit of, like, having pages you can take to conventions, I assume, as well.
Yeah, there's that. But actually just, like, I just like doing it on paper. It's, like, I like it better. It's nice.
Have you done any conventions since Squirrel Girl started? I know it kind of started between con seasons, but I know that you've also... I've seen you doing commissions and sketches lately. So were those just for signings, or have you done cons?
I've done 2 signings, and that's about it. No actual conventions yet.
All right, so let's talk about sketch requests.
All right.
Because I know that probably your best sketch is that time that you helped me draw Sailor Moon. And you drew her eyes, because I forgot how anime worked. Have you gotten any? I assume you've drawn a lot of Squirrel Girls. So do you have a standard Squirrel Girl down, like how every artist who goes to a convention can do Batman in, like, 6 lines? Like, have you figured out a a good quick Squirrel Girl, or is it different every time?
I try to make it different every time, just because if I did the same thing every time, I would get bored. So I want to have fun while I'm doing this and not, like, be resentful that someone else has asked for a sketch.
I wanted to talk about costume design a little bit as well. All
right.
Like I said, Squirrel Girl is pretty much the same. You know, and really, the thing with Squirrel Girl is that if you have the tail and a brown vest, you're, like, halfway there.
Yeah, like, pretty much.
But you also designed her a costume as the Scarlet Squirrel.
Yes, yes.
Harkening back to what I genuinely, I'm pretty sure Matt and I have talked about this before. I loved the Scarlet Spider's terrible costume.
Oh, I genuinely love that costume.
It's so great.
With all of my heart. With all of my heart.
It is great because he had no real secret identity, and that's perfect because that costume is impossible to hide because there's outerwear involved.
And, like, strange cropped outerwear.
It is. It's real. It's real high. It is.
Yeah.
It's a high-waisted hoodie with no sleeves.
Yeah. It's certainly something. It's so strange that I embrace it. It's sort of like Deodato Wonder Woman for me. Like, those extra additions are so weird that I'm like, yes, I'm all in. Let's do it.
Now, Matt, would you, as an expert in the field, do you consider the Scarlet Spider to have a costume that involves a jacket, or is a sleeveless hoodie a different thing?
I think a sleeveless hoodie works well enough as a jacket. I mean, it's not going to keep your arms warm, but it's a jacket, kind
of. From my recollection of what the Scarlet Spider's costume looks like, I don't believe... Does it zip up in the middle?
It does not zip up. It is a pullover.
It's a pullover. I don't think that falls into the jacket category. A pullover is a whole different thing.
All right, this is gonna quickly turn into another sandwich debate.
Yeah, that's okay. Let's not go down this road.
Interestingly enough, we've had is Squirrel Girl 3 out yet, or is it just 2?
It's just two.
So we've seen a costume change in Squirrel Girl in 2 issues. We get her Iron Squirrel armor, which I found to be delightful.
Oh my god. Okay, so you need to see that page, like the roughs for it, because there are little notes pointing to each part and to each little thing in the pile saying which armor it's from, because apparently I couldn't just tell Rico, like, this is yellow and this is red. And it'd be like, okay, this is Extremis. And this is Centurion, and that's War Machine, and there's Rescue.
So did you really go through all of it and like sort out what was part of like did you actually go through individual parts?
As I was drawing the pieces in, I was drawing specific pieces, specific armors. Even if it was just a glove, I was like, this glove is slightly different because it has this little nub right here.
Now, Erica, you know that I'm a fan of yours, and I don't want to diss your process or anything. That does seem needlessly complicated.
Oh, no. It's stupid.
But like, is that something you enjoyed? Like, kind of going back through? Because again, I know that you are someone who thinks about costume design a lot. Like when I wrote that column on costume design, I sourced you. Like I went to you to talk about it, and not just because you're the only artist online who will talk to me at 2 o'clock in the morning. Is that something you enjoy? Like kind of going back and poring over the minutiae to get the exact look that you're going for?
Yeah, I think so. Especially with something like that, you know, it's like you were meant to get a pile of different, of all the, you know, different armors that were available. I figured, why not actually make them the real armors? Like, that was more fun to me than just, like, a sort of random pile of all the, you know, somehow he has, like, 10 versions of the Ditko armor that are all strewn about. Like, that's not as exciting to me as actually having little bits and pieces from the ones that actually exist. And, like, even putting together the Iron Squirrel, I was thinking about, okay, how's this going to work? Where's her tail going to go? Which is what I thought about using, like, all the chest plates as a lobster tail. I like thinking about that stuff. I think it makes it more fun.
Now, was that something that you... Because that's such a visual idea. So was that something that, like, you know, when you and Ryan were getting ready to do the series, that you sat down and you were like, hey, I like designing costumes? Or was it more like when you were working with me and Chad, and they were just like, hey, squirrel armor, you're going to have to design that. Bye.
It was... I mean, Ryan saw that I had drawn, like, 4 pages of costumes before I even knew if I was going to be on this book. But it also was just, okay, squirrel armor.
I like that you went with the high-waisted iron shorts armor. That is always a favorite of mine.
Yes, the iron shorts are always a key aspect to any Iron Man-related thing, I think. So I want to pivot to talk about one of my pet topics, what I consider to be one of my pet topics, and that is humor and comedy in comics, because I don't think there's enough of it. So I think Squirrel Girl really fills a niche that needed to be filled. You know, when we were talking earlier about how you ended up on this book, it was kind of just like, you know, Marvel assigned you to it, and then only later did you find out that Ryan North was part of it. And you just happened, I guess you kind of just happened to fall into doing a book of which comedy is a large aspect. You know, were you glad to find out that you were doing something with such a comedic slant to it? Because there is, like, so much humor in your art. You're so good at drawing stuff that's humorous. As soon as I found out you were on this book, I thought you were a great fit for it. So were you glad to know that that was a part of what you would be doing at Marvel?
I think so. I think when I first found out, I was mostly just really excited it was going to be Ryan. Because, not even because he's funny, it was because he's good.
He's got those prizes.
I think I was also excited for it to be a funny book because it's just it's a different kind of superhero book. Like, I knew it was not going to be the same as other things that were out there. I mean, it was a Squirrel Girl book, so it's going to be a little different anyway. But, yeah, I think I was more excited about it just because those were things that would make it stand out as a property.
Well, there are so many really great comedic touches to it that is very unsurprising. I mean, you know, Ryan North is a very funny writer. Even in Midas Flesh, which involves planetary genocide, like, there's a lot of really funny stuff. And so you see bits and pieces like all the clubs in number 2 and the Deadpool trading cards that she uses to figure things out.
There are so many more clubs that never made it to the page because Ryan just wrote this giant list of joke clubs. It's like, I don't think even half of them are on the page in there.
Do you remember any that didn't make it in? Because there's, I mean, We Love Bees is a pretty great club name. But
there was so much more text for We Love Bees too. There's like an entire paragraph that was meant to be on the side, and I was like, that's not happening, Ryan. It's not going to get on there. No, I just put in the ones I thought were the best, like We Love Bees and Club Club.
The Club Club was pretty great.
I love Club Club.
I like the sign that says, question, quiz club, answer, yes. That's a good one. There's a lot of really fun stuff in that. So was that stuff in there, that was all in the script?
Yeah.
I just kind of assumed Ryan that was all added during lettering.
I mean, it was in the sense that a letterer put in a lot of the text. But
no, I mean the jokes. I know how lettering works, Erica.
All right.
I know you said there was more for the We Love Bees club, but any others that come to mind?
I mean, I could pull it up right now.
I mean, look, I'm not doing anything else tonight.
All right, I'll pull it up.
That's right, everybody.
Remember, because I'm on issue 5 right now, so issue 2 was kind of a while ago for me. I don't remember, like, all the little jokes that were in the beginning, you know?
Everybody is getting bonus material. Normally, you would have to buy the Unbeatable Squirrel Girl trade paperback in 6 months to get this kind of good stuff.
We're sending Erica back to the rear view to an issue that is long forgotten because she is so far ahead of all of us.
Erica's from the future. Matt and I are as cavemen to her advanced mind.
Have we filled enough time for it to be up now?
Listen, we'll vamp all okay. night long.
All right. Chess Club. Humanity is number two at chess after computers, but we try harder.
That is such a long club name.
Quiz Club is pop quiz hotshot. What's the best club on campus? Night Swimming Club. We swim at night. You gotta try it. Get Together and Eat Cookies Once a Week Club. It's great. Awesome Self-Driving Solar Powered Car Club. No, you are not allowed to drive the car. Okay.
These are so long!
I know! Bees is Beekeeping Effusive Enthusiasm Society. And then there's more that are in the background further down.
Okay. Oh, so those were just the foreground clubs.
Yeah. No, those are the clubs the first page. Okay. Tattoo Club. Number one enemy is the Tattoo Removal Club. Humans versus Zombies Club. That Delicious Cheese Club.
That one made it in. It was sculpted out of cheese. I thought that was a nice touch.
Anime Club. I think, yeah, those are the ones that are meant to be like in the background.
Was it Casey Green's Anime Club?
Oh my god. Had I remembered that, I would have drawn that in. Well, but I forgot.
Looking back at that scene now, I noticed that you're in there.
And Ryan and Rico.
Yeah, you, Ryan North and Rico Renzi, who is an incredibly talented colorist who has done some of our favorite work here on Ajax in the past year. Yeah, you guys are just at a table where there's a big poster of an acorn behind you, which I guess is the Squirrel Girl Club.
Yeah, yeah.
Is Marvel Universe Erica Henderson canonically still in college? That's the question everybody wants an answer to.
Oh, are all three of us in college? Yeah, I'm in college.
All right,
why not?
I'm glad we got an answer.
Why not?
I'm glad we got the definitive answer. You heard it here first, everybody. Just like MTV News.
Now I can start over. Do things right.
I'm going to do it right this time. Now you can change your Tumblr name to Erica Succeeds.
We'll see. We'll see how it comes out the second time. This might be the beginning of Back to the Future 2. We don't know.
Do you think you're going to be in an alternate Hill Valley?
I don't know.
An alternate Boston?
I mean, Boston's already going to hell. It's like buried under 10 feet of snow.
Oh, but you're going to get some, I hear there's going to be some casinos soon. It's going to be just like Biff's Hill Valley.
And maybe the Olympics, which no one's happy about.
Oh, it sounds, it's like, listen, I love the Olympics. I love the idea of the Olympics.
I got it. Erica, all you have to do is go into, I guess, 2020? That's when you'd be getting the Olympics, I guess? And,
yeah.
And get a sports almanac that tells you who wins all the Olympic events. Then come back and place those bets.
Erica, when are you going to draw that Back to the Future adaptation that I know Ryan North wants to do?
I'll talk to IDW.
Oh, do they have the rights?
They might. It's either them or Boom.
It's always good to assume that IDW has the rights to every licensed comic.
Yeah, listen, if it is a licensed property, there are three places it can go. And yeah. That is IDW, Boom, and Dynamite. Oh, man, we got to find out. We got to find out. Because, listen, I want to do that Back to the Future 2.5 comic. Fill in those precious moments. I want Evil Biff to come back as a cyborg. I think that is... That's why am I giving it away? Why am I giving it away for free here in the interview segment? So, Erica, obviously Squirrel Girl is keeping you busy.
It is.
What else? Anything else on your plate, or is it just Squirrel Girl for now?
I've also been working on a story for Thrillbent, which is a digital comic, of course.
Again, these digital comics you hate.
I don't hate them. I like having books.
I distinctly remember you saying you hated them.
Alright, fine.
You said you hated them? Anybody who read digital comics? Anyone who subscribed to Squirrel Girl digitally was a lesser human. Matt might have edited that out, but I remember you saying it.
You can, okay. Our listeners can go back and roll back the tape and judge for themselves what was really said.
So you're working on something for Thrillbent.
Yes.
Are you writing and drawing, or is that a
collaboration? I'm working with Sean and Maguire.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And
it hasn't been. I don't think it's been announced yet, so I don't know how much more I'm saying about that. I guess
That's all right.
Yeah.
You also did the book with Brian Clevenger that unfortunately did not meet its Kickstarter goal.
It did not, but it may rear its head again soon.
That being Infernal Affairs?
Yes, that being Infernal Affairs, or the Bureau of Infernal Affairs.
That's right.
So as not to confuse people with the movie Infernal Affairs.
With the Hong Kong action film, yes.
I assumed it was the Bureau of that movie. Is it? Do I have that wrong?
You do.
Listen,
you have that wrong.
We had Clevenger on the show. He's not a very informative interview.
He's an insulting interview.
He is. He's, he's too busy running his mouth about me and Matt. Not busy running his mouth about Erica Henderson.
All right.
Erica, have you had the chance? Because I know, like, you know, you have done, in the midst of other comics work, a lot of, I don't know if I would call it, you know, drawing for fun, even though I could tell you have a lot of fun doing it, but you get to sell those prints and stuff too, so there's a business aspect to it. But just like all your art of movie stuff, has Squirrel Girl kind of put the brakes on that, or have you been doing some of that too lately?
I haven't really been doing as much of that, but partly because of time, partly just I sort of have a list of ones that I want to do, but I just haven't gotten around to it. And those tend to be more involved pieces, so if I want to do a quick piece for fun, that's not the place to do it.
Yeah.
But I do want to keep doing them. Like, I really want to do a UHF one.
That would be so good.
I just want it to be like a Stanley Spadowski's Clubhouse poster.
Of him blasting a kid with a fire hose?
He's so good.
Is there anything better in that movie than drinking from the fire hose?
So good.
Than just the phrase, you get to drink from the fire hose.
there's the ad for the store that's nothing but spatulas. Spatula
that
City.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
That is pretty good. Why are we watching
UHF? Crazy
right
Eddies. Now? Crazy Eddies. A club of seal to make a better deal.
Oh, man. Eric, I'm glad we got to talk about UHF.
It's the best movie.
It's pretty great.
Oh, it's really up there for me. It's not number one. I'm not sure what number one is. I mean, actually, I do know what number one is, but it's up there for me.
Okay, what is number one?
RoboCop.
Is that because RoboCop doesn't have a woman in it where you look at her and go, she thinks Obama's a socialist?
No.
But did you draw RoboCop for your movie scene?
No.
I guess it's not a zine. I guess it's a.
Oh no! For the zine, yeah.
Yeah. I know. I've watched you draw RoboCop before.
Yeah, because I'm always drawing RoboCop.
Always drawing RoboCop.
Always drawing RoboCop is another great.
That's a good. Yeah.
All right. Well, now is the time of the interview where we like to move it on to our listeners. From the Twitter to get their questions for the people that we interview. Matt, if people want to get in on that, how can they go about it?
They should just draw RoboCop and then continue drawing RoboCop nonstop until their hand hurts, until they can't draw him anymore, until they know nothing but drawing RoboCop. And then once they finish doing that, they should go to twitter.com, sign up for an account, and seek out the ISB, that's Chris, and high-minded MW, that's me, and wait until Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 6:30 Pacific, and wait for us to put out the call for questions for our guest. That is when you will have your opportunity to ask a question of our guest with your numbed hand that's been drawing RoboCop for years. Just like you're about to hear right now.
All I can imagine is Clarence Boddicker blowing off Alex Murphy's hand right now.
See, I figured you'd be going for guns, guns, guns in your head right now.
That is a great...
Because you do love that scene.
We did get a question. Can we hear Erica's Kurtwood Smith impression? I've heard it's dead on. Our first question is going to come from Twitsuvius.
That's my boyfriend.
Oh, is that your boyfriend?
It's my boyfriend.
Well, then why is he asking this question on Twitter when he could just ask you?
Here's to a speedy recovery.
Because he wants the world to know.
He wants to know which Marvel hero has the best butt and which Marvel villain has the best butt.
Hank McCoy for best butt on heroes, because that guy, you know, always hanging upside down, working the glutes.
Now, I want to point out, are you saying that because your boyfriend dressed up as Hank McCoy for Halloween?
Oh, you mean because I made him dress up as Hank McCoy for Halloween? And I sewed him a tiny little costume to put on?
Baby, you know what you'd look good in is this Jack Kirby-designed X-Men uniform from 1962.
Now, I assume you're talking about pre-blue and furry Hank McCoy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Although, I mean, I'm assuming that he still has, like, the same amount of leg muscle and butt muscle.
Yeah, it's just under, it's under a lot of blue fur.
Yeah. Villain. I might have to go Kraven. I know he was in the first issue of Squirrel Girl. It's not because of that. I already loved Kraven before that.
I legitimately assumed Kraven was in Squirrel Girl number one. I assumed you insisted on that.
Oh, no. He appeared in the script, and I was like, this is perfect. And there was at one point when someone said, we'll need to find out if he's being used elsewhere this month. And I was like, I will murder who else.
I just, if we're going by the amount of, the level of conditioning someone has, Batroc has got to have like a That's pretty, he's a pretty leaper. Defined gluteus.
You know what? I'm gonna get like way too detailed right now, but I feel like he's gonna be too lean. Like you need a little bit of cushion on top of that.
Fair enough. I'll take it.
But I mean, you know, Kraven is a dude who wears skin-tight leopard print capri pants.
He has confidence.
Yeah, so obviously Kraven thinks he's got a good butt.
Yeah.
So what? No Gambit, by the way, on the hero side.
Not a Gambit fan.
I think that's the one thing he's got going for him. But maybe that's just because the action figure had the high kicking action.
He wears that coat. He's like covering stuff up. I don't know. He's not proud like Kraven.
That coat is court mandated, I believe. Tom Tificat on Twitter would like to know, when did you hit upon the idea of making Squirrel Girl curvier than she's been in the past?
I don't think I ever sat down and said, I'm going to change this up. I'm going to destroy the patriarchy now with this character. I think I just like to draw different characters, different shapes, and I just, you know, she just feels, she's already like this weird character, and no one really, everyone who sees her for the first time doesn't think of her as a superhero. Like, Iron Man first saw her, and he was like, what is this crazy person? And so, it just seemed right that she would be kind of more squat and not have the same body shape as other super ladies. And also, just, I feel like she's got to have, like, those thick CrossFit thighs from, like, running up trees all day long.
And I mean, look, it's not exactly like there's a set design that everybody knows that is the iconic Squirrel Girl. Like, Squirrel Girl has had pretty varied looks and designs over the years anyway in her various appearances. Right. So it's not like you're destroying some, you know, classic look.
Well, there's been a lot of comments on like, whoa, she looks so different from every other lady in comics. And I'm like, all right. That's cool, I guess. I didn't really think about it too much outside of what do I think this person would look like.
I hope that if anyone who works on Marvel Puzzle Quest is listening and you want to change the name of one of her abilities to CrossFit thighs from running up trees all day, I would welcome that.
I think that should be her purple ability.
Let's see. Bear Surprise has a question that I think both of you could answer. Is Chris Sims as a collaborator as power mad yet amiable as Chris Sims, the convention goer?
I feel you're more amiable as a collaborator.
I can hear Matt seething right now.
Well, no, here's my response to that.
Okay, but cause I'm not writing with you. I'm just like, I'm taking the results of all the fights and all the hard feelings.
Well, no, I've never collaborated with Chris as a writer. I can only imagine what Chad has to go through.
You actually have collaborated with me as a writer on several occasions.
But not on a comic.
Not on a comic.
I'm talking about, like, I don't count our movie review articles.
They mean nothing to you.
But as far as, like, Power Mad goes, frankly, I have all the power over this podcast.
Yes, that is true.
Because Chris lets me do all the work.
I let you do all the work.
Well,
I refuse to do any and all work is the thing.
My point is, I could edit Chris out of this show completely and post it.
Matt is the power mad one. Matt has gone mad with power, podcast power. Greg Thelen would like to know, it is a metaphysical question for you. Could Squirrel Girl beat herself?
I have an answer for this. And the answer is the issue of Marvel vs. DC when Batman and Captain America started to fight but then became friends and helped each other out.
I believe you mean in JLA vs. Avengers.
Was that? No, I thought that was Marvel vs. DC.
No, it's JLA Avengers.
Oh, shit. Oh, well.
I mean, it might have also happened in Marvel vs. DC.
Well, I think it happened in Marvel vs. DC because, like, they were in, like, water and they had to help each other, like, not drown.
Okay, that is in Marvel vs. DC. In JLA vs. Avengers, they size each other up and Batman says, "You could conceivably beat me, but it would take time we don't have." Which is a pretty great way of getting out of a fight.
No, yeah, I'm glad I didn't mix that up. Good.
There's a definitive answer of whether Squirrel Girl can defeat herself. Because she is in Marvel Puzzle Quest. And you could conceivably have a battle in Marvel Puzzle Quest where Squirrel Girl is on two different teams that are opposing each other.
I lost a round in Marvel Puzzle Quest when I had Squirrel Girl on my team, and I thought about suing the company. Charlotte of Oz would like to know, which is the one true peanut butter, crunchy or smooth?
Crunchy.
Really?
Why do we keep asking her questions? Why do we keep asking Charlotte's questions?
I thought this one would go smoother, Matt. I thought it would be smooth as the one true peanut butter. Okay, we'll move on from that. Really? Crunchy peanut butter? Okay.
Texture.
At Crooked Knight would like to know, how great would it be to have a full issue of Squirrel Girl throwing people in the air over and over? Which was, in fact, my favorite part of Squirrel Girl number one.
That'd be a pretty good issue, yeah. I'll bet that Ryan can figure out why that would be happening. It'd be great.
That and her battle cry of, "You're a jerk who sucks." let's see here. At Hitler Puncher on Twitter would like to know, corn dogs, overrated?
Until I went to this place, Trina Starlight Lounge, it's like not, that's nearish where I live, I would have said yes. They make a mean corn dog. So, I don't know.
If anything,
might
I believe
not be overrated.
If anything, I believe that corn dogs are underrated.
Are you a corn dog guy, Matt?
I enjoy a good corn dog.
Like, twice a year, Sonic will, like, do 50 cent corn dogs. And even though I know I shouldn't, because, like, 80% of the time that I eat a Sonic, I end up getting food poisoning. So if they're selling them for 50 cents, what is the cost on a corn dog?
So Sonic cannot be a sponsor of the show.
Yeah, Sonic cannot be a sponsor. Dunkin' Donuts, roll right in. Sonic America's Drive-In. Look, they've got two annoying assholes from the improv scene. Anyway, I eat too many corn dogs on those days is what I'm getting at here. Tithaga on Twitter says, do you have a squirrel model you draw off of for tippy toe, or do you just start with cute and add a tail?
Yeah, I don't have a civic squirrel model that I work off of. I just have, like, reference photos that I use to make sure I'm getting particulars right on the body, but no, just a squirrel, just a regular squirrel.
All right, well, that does it for the Twitter questions segment. Erica, before we let you go, can you tell everyone where they can find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at Erica Fails, and on Tumblr at ericafailsatlife.tumblr.com.
And, of course, Squirrel Girl 1 and 2 are available now digitally and in print at your local comic book store. And Subatomic Party Girls 1 through 3 also still available. It's $3. You know, don't be weird. Just pay the $3. Get some more Erica Henderson art. Erica, thanks for joining us. I'm so glad you got to stop by. We've been wanting to have you on the show for a while.
It was fun. I'm glad I got to come in, too, because I feel like every time you ask me if I can be on the show, something is going on. Like, that's like the one time in the week where something's actually happening.
Wait, who doesn't have something going on a Thursday night at 9:30? Erica, thank you so much.
You're welcome. It's fun.
Thanks once again to Erica Henderson. One thing that has marked Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, like I said, her catchphrase, "You're the jerk who sucks," is a pretty good piece of comic book dialogue. But is it good enough to make the list of the top 100 comic book quotes of all time? I don't know, which is why Matt and I have set out with our project for the year 2015, the Word Heavyweight Champions.
That's right. We are taking lists from our listeners of quotes that are in comic books, and we are assembling those into a list of the top 100 comic book quotes of all time. We're going to crown the Word Heavyweight Champion when we're done.
That's right. The stuff you send in, it might not make it to the list. It might not be good enough. We might dismiss it outright. Or maybe it'll go on there. Maybe it will unseat the Akewood quote at the top of the list.
Our first quote, or our first set of quotes, is going to come from Christian Rivero, who is a line stepper.
Here come the line steppers.
And his first quote is, "Never stop making them pay."
Which I was something, thinking about that quote completely independently of the show like 3 days ago.
That is from World War Hulk, and it's something that the Hulk says in his Green Scar incarnation. Chris, what do you think of that quote? I think it's pretty good.
I love that quote.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's awesome, because it's like a pretty cool life motto.
Yeah. If you want to live a life entirely based on spite, that is a good mantra for you.
I wouldn't say that I want to. I would say that I do.
That you've been forced into that position?
Yes, by all of my enemies, including you.
Fair enough.
I'm just kidding. We're friends.
Where does it go on the list, do you think?
It's an interesting line because it's a good line just independently. Like it sounds badass, divorced from the story.
Yeah.
It is also an excellent summary of what that 2 years of Hulk Comics was all about.
It really is. Like it is the summation of that story.
Yeah. And I love that it comes back at a point where even the Hulk goes, "Okay, we can stop making them pay now." I would say it maybe doesn't, like, it definitely doesn't beat Ion Airwolf.
No, it does not beat Ion Airwolf.
It
does not beat It's Clobber in Time, which is, no, that's our number one right now, right?
Yeah, that's our number one.
Yeah.
I do think it beats With Great Power Comes Great Responsibility, which is hilarious because it is such a completely opposed viewpoint.
It's the opposite viewpoint, but I agree with you. I think it probably goes above that as well.
Okay, so do we put it above "I'm the best there is at what I do, and what I do isn't very nice"?
I would.
Okay, do we put it above the Ra's al Ghul quote, "You pursue me past you're dying, are you man or fiend from hell"?
I think the Ra's al Ghul quote is more poetic. I like the sound of it more. I like the way it rolls off the tongue more.
It definitely has that, you know, that good, like, prime era Denny O'Neill, not quite Claremontian purpleness to it, but yeah. Poetic, I think, is the word.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's put it under that and above Wolverine's line.
Okay. The next one on Christian's list is from Green Lantern number 188. He says, which is just, "Mogo doesn't socialize."
You know what? 10 years ago, that's a great line.
Yeah.
10 years ago before MOGO was in like 8 crossovers.
Yeah.
I think it makes the list. I think it goes below, at the bottom of the list.
Even below that Injustice quote?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I love the police wouldn't think to look for your body on Saturn, Matt. That shit's hilarious.
All right. We'll put it at the bottom.
But, like, because the thing is, like, it's a great punchline for that story, but then, like, it doesn't work in any other context.
Yeah, removed from that context, it doesn't really mean anything.
Because the whole joke of that story is, hey, you're never going to see MOGO show up in any other comics. It's a ridiculous thing. And then comes MOGO.
Yeah, but then it's been totally reversed since then. Okay, the last one is very good. Is a very good quote.
Okay, I'm excited. I'm excited because you never get excited about anything.
This is something that is said by Gore, the God Butcher, in Thor, God of Thunder, number 9.
All right.
He says, "You should have brought more Thors."
Oh my god! Because that's the story. That's the story with 3 Thors, right?
Yep.
Where past Thor, present Thor, and future Thor all team up and fight him.
Yep.
That's almost "you brought you to a me fight" good.
I agree. It's like up there.
Jason Aaron, man. Oh my god. Why is he so good? Why aren't we that good? Is my question.
Maybe we'll get there one day, but we're not there yet.
Is it the beard? Do we have to grow? You've got a beard.
Mine is trimmed considerably, but yeah.
Maybe I gotta grow a beard, man. Maybe I gotta grow a beard before I write some shit like that.
Yeah.
Alright, okay.
This one goes up there. This one goes up there.
Yeah, like that's... I think it goes above "I did it 35 minutes ago." I don't know if it goes above the Airwolf line.
That seems fair. That seems fair to me.
Okay, so that is currently our number 4. "You should have brought more Thors." Yeah. Jeez, that's so great.
That is a fucking great quote.
Even if you don't know what's happening in that story.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
All right. I think we have time to blow through one more list, but we got to make it quick.
Yeah, we went through that one pretty quick. Let's do another one.
All right. This list is from Bob Cairns, another line stepper.
Ah, these line steppers. They're getting stuff in.
This one is from The Wicked and the Divine, number 3.
Okay.
This is something that Baphomet says to Morrigan. The quote is, "We're going to do what we do best. Let's none more goth this hole into the ground."
That's a great line if you are Kieran Gillen.
Correct. Correct.
Let's none more goth
this hole into the ground.
Let's none more goth this hole into the ground. That's fun.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
That's fun. Do you think it makes the list?
I think
it's not that it's a bad line.
I think it's good enough that we don't kick it off now.
Yeah.
I think it probably goes fairly low.
I mean, I would put it above "MOGO Doesn't Socialize." I would probably put it above "Criminals Are a Superstitious Cowardly Lot," but okay. I don't think I'd put it above "With Great Power."
That seems good to me.
Okay.
The next quote on Bob's list is from Preacher number 9.
Oh, and shit.
There are so many Preacher lines that we could include on here.
If we were building a museum, we would have the Garth Ennis wing.
Yeah. This list could be all Akewood and Preacher in my book. This is something that Jesse's dad says to Jesse. It's one of the heartfelt lines from Preacher.
Oh, okay. So not miss. Shit, miss might be the new number 1.
Miss, if you send in miss, I might put that at number 1.
God, Preacher's kind of, Preacher's a little bit overrated, and I've always talked about how Preacher drags around Salvation. I feel like Salvation's really draggy.
There are a couple stories sort of near the end-ish.
Yeah.
That you could just cut out completely.
You can skip volume 7.
Like the Sausage King guy.
Yeah, that's Salvation.
Yeah, that one you can just cut out totally.
They're fine, but they kind of feel like water treading. But fuck if that book doesn't bring it back.
Oh God, the last arc of Preacher. Okay, we're not doing every story ever right now though. All right, the line is, "You got to be one of the good guys, son, because there's way too many of the bad."
Oh, that line fucking rules, dude.
Yeah.
That line will bring a damn tear to your eye.
It's look, it's not miss, and it's not fuck communism, but it's pretty good.
I'd say that's probably like top five lines from Preacher.
Yeah.
I would put that one above the Watchmen quote.
But below, what's right above the Watchmen quote?
Right above the Watchmen quote is, "You should have brought more Thors."
Oh yeah, it doesn't beat "You should have brought more Thors." Okay. That's right. A good place for that one.
Read it back one more time while I write it.
"You gotta be one of the good guys, son, because there's way too many of the bad."
Yeah, that's a good ass line.
All right, the last one we have from Bob is another good one. Another very good one. This one is something that Judge Dredd says to the Dark Judges.
I bet I know what it is.
Take a guess.
Is it "Gaze into the Fist of Dread"?
Yep, you guessed it.
How much do we weigh context in this?
I think part of what makes a quote a particularly good quote is that it works well, like within the context, it's awesome, right?
Right.
But you can take it out of that context and it's still quotable.
Because the thing is, like, if you've just seen that panel in isolation, it's great. But, like, there's, like, three or four issues or progs before that where Judge Fear is, like, just killing people by looking at them and saying, "Gaze into the face of fear." Like, he's, like, it's his thing. They set it up. Like, he does it three times. And then, and plus, there's the caption in that scene where he's got Dredd and he opens up the cemetery gates on his helmet and he says, "Gaze into the face of fear." And the caption is like, you know, "Judge Fear's gaze would kill an ordinary man, but Dredd is a judge." And then Dredd punches a hole through his head and says, "Gaze into the fist of Dredd." With context, that's like top three of all time. Outside of context, I think it loses something.
Yeah. It, outside of context, it just feels like Dredd is saying, "I'm punching you in the face, through the face, in a weird way."
Yeah, which is still pretty cool.
Yeah, sure.
But I don't think that beats "I did it 35 minutes ago."
I don't either.
Okay. So, I'm going to put it right under that, but above the next wave quote?
Yeah, I'll get, that's good. It gets points for brevity, if nothing else. And it really is great in that context. All right. Bob, thanks for sending in your quotes list. We're going to get to more quotes in 2 weeks. If you would like to send in a list for the Word Heavyweight Champion, you can send it to our email address, which is warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. Also, be sure to check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. I almost forgot our own website. And if you want to ask us a listener question, because every other week we do a listener question segment, go to our Tumblr and ask us a question there. That Tumblr is warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. Also, be sure to check us out on iTunes. If you go to iTunes and you search for War Rocket Ajax, you'll find the show. If you like the show, leave us a review. The more positive reviews we get on iTunes, the more we're featured and the more stuff we can do on the show because we'll have more listeners. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places you can find us on the internet. For me, all you have to do is go to about.me/MattDWilson. The D is as in danger. That's where you'll find links to all the stuff I'm currently doing. Chris, where can everybody find all your stuff?
Everybody can find all my stuff at about.me/ChrisSims. That's CHRISSIMS. And of course, you can find me on Twitter @TheIsb, THEISB. You can check out the other podcast I do called Sailor Business, where me and Jordan D. White watch a bunch of Sailor Moons with guests and talk about it. It's a fun, fun time. And of course, Movie Fighters. We have a new episode of that coming up later this week. Probably our weirdest one, I would say, the weirdest request we've ever gotten. We are going to be watching Dude, Where's My Car? With the commentary on. So that'll be something.
I'm not looking forward to it.
I'm not either, because I've never seen that movie. So the first time I see it is going to be on a Skype call with you while I'm watching, like, listening to the commentary.
Yeah.
For money.
For money. At least the for money part is good.
Yes. If you enjoy this show, head over to patreon.com/warrocketajax and maybe think about throwing a few bucks our way and maybe becoming a line stepper, getting access to bonus content or art that I am drawing. And I use art in quotes for each show. And that does it for War Rocket Ajax 242. Good show, Matt.
Very good. Thanks again.
I would say another solid offering. From the Clytus Media family of podcasts.
I'd say this episode's tied for number one episode of all time. It's a 242-way tie.
I think it's more like a 230-way tie. you know the ones I'm talking about. That about does it for this week's show, though. We will talk to you all next week, and have a good one.
Yeah! Flash. From this day on.
Wait, what was the question? Was there a question?
There was a question. You, like, I ask a question, then I say four more sentences.